Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. You might have noticed it's a Monday, and this Monday is time for our monthly check-in with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu on Mondays with the Mayor. She's here in Studio 2 after an adventure coming to work this morning. Mayor Wu, welcome back.
Nice to see you, as always.
Great to have you. And I am going to start with a little bit of transportation, which seems like the news of the day. You rode one of the shuttle buses for the Orange Line to work this morning. How did it go?
I got on the bus with my fingers crossed, and it turned out okay. You know, this is generally a slower time of year. Anyway, this particular week and the next week are often when things have a little final lull before Labor Day. And so the real test is what the next couple weeks after that looks like, especially a school start. But today it was very smooth. I took the usual bus to Forest Hills, and then from there, instead of getting on the Orange Line all the way to City Hall, got on a shuttle bus to Copley Station, switched to the Green Line to Government Center. So one extra change in the middle, but we didn't see much traffic. It was just about the same length of time as my normal commute, and it went very smoothly.
So you've become a bit of a veritable planes, trains, and automobiles over this last week or so. Your tweet, you just laid it out, right? 34 bus to Forest Hills, to the Southern Orange Line shuttle, to the Green Line, to City Hall. You're in the know. You're the mayor. Do you feel like the average person trying to figure out how to navigate this week has what they need and is going to find it to be seamless?
I took a lot of notes along the way of places where even in the next couple of days, I know we can make improvements. But
like what?
For example, when you are getting off the bus at Forest Hills, there are two places where buses load up and you can find buses either on the Washington Street side, which is known as the Upper Busway, or the Hyde Park Ave side, which is you have to take an escalator all the way down. It's on the Hyde Park, on the opposite side of the station. The shuttle buses pick up from there, but there was no signage whatsoever when you're getting off the MBTA bus to know where to go, that you have to go down to the other side. And so there was a sign of how to get to the commuter rail, which is very helpful. Great. We need to add a little bit more information and wayfinding there. I also was making notes that along the way, I did not see multilingual signage in places that we need it and expect to have it. And so just making some tweaks there, and we'll send that feedback to the MBTA. But many of the details we had discussed as we were mapping out these routes about loading zones, keeping bus lanes clear, tree branches that were stretching out that needed to be trimmed back, those all seemed great and had been executed exactly as they needed to.
So I would almost imagine that right now you would need one of those phones where you just pick it up like a bat phone, right? And Steve Poftak, of the general manager of the MBTA, is on the other line, like just picks up immediately when you've got notes like this. How regularly are you in touch with him? Can you do that? Can you just call him and say, hey, here's what I saw today. I took these notes.
Yeah, I do speak with the general manager frequently, and he has been quite accommodating as we send over city-specific requests for our residents and make note of important things that are helping the MBTA run their diversion system better. We also have it's almost the entirety of our City Hall organization thinking about this, planning for this, making notes. We have a Slack channel where any city employee can participate, and some people are just sending photos in along their commutes as well. So it's not just me taking notes along the way. Others are reporting back what we've heard back from the T, and the MBTA and the City of Boston are in regular communication. The T is embedded up at our traffic management center in City Hall. We have staff over at their MassDOT headquarters on Stewart Street, I believe.
Is that typical, or is that because
that is just during this shutdown? And okay, so we are in constant communication in real time and making those notes as we go.
Have you talked to PuffTech today?
I have not yet. I came straight here after one meeting in City Hall.
Well, thank you for doing that. So I joked about the planes, trains, and automobiles. You biked to work last week. You took your boys on the commuter line on Saturday. You're trying these different methods. What do you like best?
Well, we shall see. But the fastest way, the most predictable way, is the commuter rail during this shutdown. It comes on a schedule, and you know, there's a little bit to be desired of how often the train stops on that schedule. But if you're able to swing your schedule to match when the train does come, it is fast, it is predictable, it's air conditioned and comfortable, and it's free during this shutdown.
You just normally have to show a card, a Charlie card.
And we actually didn't even have to show our card when we got on, because it was kind of, you know, kids in tow and everyone getting on. So that is a usual barrier, that the prices for the commuter rail in certain stations in Boston further away from downtown can be three times or even more as expensive for the commuter rail than the subway and the train and the subway and the bus. But because it is free during the shutdown, it is a very, very convenient option.
So a couple of things there. First, had your boys been on the commuter line before? Did they find that?
Oh, yeah. We used to, when they were both at City Hall Childcare, we would go all the time through a combination of bus, Orange Line, commuter rail when we could catch the right timing. So they were a little bit bigger and were not buckled into strollers anymore at 5 and 7. So unfortunately, I was trying to make them not crawl over all of the seats, but that went very smoothly. We've also heard that some of our alternative service in terms of Blue Bikes being free during the shutdown has already seen an impact as well. I just got numbers headed in this morning that over the weekend, we saw a higher usage of Blue Bikes than ever before in the system's history. And so the silver lining of some of this Orange Line stress is that people are trying out different methods, and we're seeing that when you remove financial barriers, the appetite is there. The demand is there for biking, for commuter rail, for all these other modes that can help relieve pressure on the trains and buses as well.
You expressed a little euphemistically the lack of regularity of commuter line trains, given what the Orange Line would have offered. Has there been conversation about increasing the frequency of commuter rail trains and stops during this 1 month period?
Yes. Yeah, so there has been an increase during this period. But for example, on Saturday, I was going to an ice cream social event in the South End, and we needed to get from Rosendale to Back Bay. The train came every 2 hours. Mm. And so luckily it worked out that in the kind of 2:30 time period to get to the start of the event at 3, that was fine. But there are many situations where that wouldn't work. During the weekday, the usual frequency of stops of commuter rail lines from Forest Hills into, say, Back Bay or Ruggles or South Station is 1 an hour, which is just unacceptable. It's now twice that frequency during the shutdown, 1 every 30 minutes, which is still a little bit to be desired, but a lot better than it had been before.
So you also mentioned, excuse me, I'm just going to clear my throat. You also mentioned this is a quiet couple of weeks, which thank goodness, right? I was struck this morning, MassDOT, Department of Transportation Highway Administrator Jonathan Gulliver was on Morning Edition this morning with Deb Becker. I just want to play a little sound.
We've seen that Monday morning commutes have been much lighter over this past year, so I expect that actually tomorrow may be the worst of this whole stretch. Tuesday, people are going to really look at how does this new traffic configuration work for them. But generally, after about 5 to 10 days of this, or five days to a week, really, people start to settle into new patterns. The traffic settles down, and we see that it becomes manageable for the rest of the period.
Which was a lovely thought, but I mean, you just made that. Do we really think so?
The only correction I would make to that is that I completely agree there's a period to get used to things, but what we really need to take into account and what the city's been focused on is that there will be a whole new group of people joining the system, trying to get around the city when schools start, when universities are fully back in session, and when our Boston Public Schools start. We're already starting to see some of the area students coming, wearing uniforms and getting to school. But the real test of this is going to be in that last week when Boston Public Schools are in session, and there will be a whole new group of young people looking to set their patterns, and possibly the adult family members rearranging your patterns once you have to factor in school drop-off and packing lunches and getting folks out the door. And so as a mom, I know that that is a big change for the family once that milestone happens and school begins.
It's Mondays with the mayor, with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu here on Radio Boston. Right now we are talking all things Orange Line shutdown. I have a million more questions but I will be judicious. And I just want to flag, later in the hour, the new superintendent of the Boston Public Schools, Mary Skipper, will join us. We'll pick back up on some of this school transportation stuff when Mary Skipper joins us. Did you sleep last night?
I did sleep. I didn't sleep well 2 weeks ago when we got notice. We had 2 days notice at the city level that there'd be an announcement and that just a few weeks after that, the whole system would be shut down. And so that was quite stressful to think about the scale of work that needed to happen above ground so that the below ground track maintenance and signal upgrades could happen. It has been an unprecedented amount of planning, tree trimming, painting new infrastructure on our roadways to allow for these mega coach buses that our tight streets usually aren't used to be able to run smoothly and with the frequency that our commuters need. And so I had known going into this how much was happening. I mean, people sometimes think that City Hall shuts down Friday afternoons early, and that's kind of a stereotype of folks who work in the government. But we had our city teams going above and beyond Friday night as the shutdown started after 9 p.m. They were on those shuttle buses late into the night, just trying it one more time, taking notes, seeing what else we could change and adjust even before the Monday morning commute. And so the incredible, heroic acts of our city teams and those at the MBTA have made it possible so that we could be as prepared as we are right now.
The 2 days notice is interesting to me. So that means what? Around August 1st, Governor Baker's administration announced this on August 3rd. We'd had you the week before on, I think it was July 25th for our Mondays with the mayor. And at that time, you had said, listen, it's time for something big and bold and sweeping. And I asked you, you know, have you told the MBTA you feel this way? You said yes. It kind of made me wonder, do you think you did this? Do you think you're part of the reason?
I never would have thought that we could do it on 2 weeks' notice. I mean, it's undeniable when you ride the T on a regular basis that it has gotten scarier in recent years and even recent weeks. The number of incidents that could be categorized as freak accidents or could be a sign of something more serious has just picked up in how often these safety incidents were happening. And so we needed to do this. I just thought we'd get a little more time to plan it properly. But we have really made way and dropped a bunch of other things to all hands on deck to get this done.
But do you think that the mayor of Boston saying, go big or go home, influence the T's decision to go big or go home on this?
I hope it did. And I say that because I speak only to echo the voices of our families and residents across the city and all of our neighborhoods. And if you talk with anyone across the city in the last couple of months, the T was on everyone's minds, right? That image of someone having to jump off a bridge away from a burning train.
An Orange Line train.
We were at the verge of just people abandoning the system altogether. And so this was needed. It has been a tight timeline, but we have done everything humanly possible to be prepared for this moment at the start. And we are continuing to adjust things along the way and monitor very closely how it's going.
So here's PofTak, General Manager Steve PofTak, talking at the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce last week. Q&A. It kind of speaks for itself. Here he is.
The MBTA cannot be modernized in its entirety on nights and weekends. We are now at that next stage where we are doing a major closure and trying to figure out how many projects we can get done at once. But it is going to take a sustained level of investment in this system to bring it up to the modernized state that our customers deserve and, frankly, that our workforce deserves.
All right. So if I'm reading between the lines, and we've heard other comments that essentially from PofTak and from Governor Baker basically say we reserve the right to do more of this. And then I think about MassDOT producing that red haze map, right? And saying, stay out of Boston. As the mayor of a city, I can't imagine much worse when you're responsible for a city economy than to have state officials say, don't come here. So I mean, A, what was your reaction when you heard them say, don't come here? And what do you do about that?
My reaction is that most people I know and run into across the city of Boston and beyond don't have the luxury of just deciding that they can go elsewhere for a little bit, or they'll just work from a different location, or choose to avoid inconveniences. Most people rely on being able to get to their jobs, their schools, their kids' daycare, and they need transportation and public transit as the foundation for that. And so, you know, it's all well and good to encourage those largest employers who have the capability to give workers more flexibility right now. We're doing that as an employer as well at the City of Boston, reactivating some of our hybrid work protocols that we had activated during COVID surges so that people who are directly impacted have that extra level of understanding to be able to get their work done, but also navigate the realities of our transportation system. We need a world-class public transit system to be able to grow our economy, to serve our communities, to connect our incredible healthcare institutions and universities and jobs and future to the residents of this region. And so we don't have any choice but to prioritize and invest in the system. I'm glad that there's now finally some urgency to getting things done.
So here's what Mella Bush Miles, who's the director of Transit-Oriented Development and the T-Riders Union at Alternatives for Environment and Community, ACE, here's what she told us last Friday.
People come on the train to get to small businesses in our communities, and they expect a drop in revenue, and you can't take anymore. There's already businesses here in Nubian Square that don't open on Monday and often close at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. because of this. And so this is going to cause more harm to them.
So I'm going to ask an oversimplified question on purpose. September 19th, 5 a.m., if it opens as it's supposed to, is that problem solved?
The problem won't be solved until everyone across the region can take public transit as an afterthought. The way that we view driving a car and, you know, for example, if you are trying to take a day trip to the Cape or to visit a museum, or you just need to drop your kid off at college, you don't go onto the mapping software and look at where exactly all the gas stations are lined up just in case you need to fuel up or have something unexpected happen along the way. You know that wherever you are, it'll be easy and you'll be able to find your way to fill up and keep going. That kind of convenience and reliability where public transportation isn't an extra layer of planning you have to build into your mental health and your family time, that is what we need to aim for. And that is what will enable us to be the city that we have the potential to be, a home for everyone with housing that is accessible and affordable, jobs that are connected to the future, schools that are excellent and serve all our children. That is not possible unless people can get to where they need to go without lots of extra layers of stress. And so we have to get this done. This is a good first step, but the MBTA really does need to deliver below ground with all the effort we've been putting in above ground to make this possible. We have to get it done. And again, I hope a silver lining is that we see through this experience, when we decide to do something big, we can make changes pretty quickly. And those changes can have huge benefit, making bikes free for everyone. We've seen how many more people have taken that up. Having buses go faster, we can apply that same improvement to any of our bus routes in the city of Boston. So we're learning a lot. We're taking notes. We're measuring things so that we can implement all the lessons afterwards as well.
Let's have a little fun for a minute. So I was just in Italy. There was a lot of gelato, and I don't normally eat a lot
gelato.
Of ice cream. Yeah, but we had some good stuff. So are you an ice cream person?
Oh, my goodness. I think the kids and I have been to every ice cream spot in the entire city.
Favorite flavor?
Caramel fudge brownie at Ron's in Hyde Park.
Oh, that sounds really, really good. And what about your boys? What did they like?
It's been changing, but they can do a, sometimes there's like a fruit, strawberry or mango or peach or whatever's in season, or we can always go chocolate too.
Well, a great way to get your kids to eat some fruit too. If we could just come up totally with a broccoli counts. Ice cream that tastes like that, we would be in good shape. All right, I want to talk about climate for a few minutes now. Earlier this month, you appointed Oliver Sellers Garcia, who is a former MBTA administrator, as the senior advisor for the city's Green New Deal plan. Here he is. He's talking to WBUR's Rupa Shenoy about how he sees the role.
There are so many talented staff at the city, from chiefs all the way down, who are working on these issues day to day. They have a lot of direct services to provide. And one of the opportunities of this position is to really see how we can make more connections across different departments and really kind of make the departments greater than the sum of their parts.
This hire took a while. Why?
Oh, my goodness. I was searching for a needle in a haystack, someone who had broad sweeping vision, urgency on the issues, following national best practices of what technologies or policies or programs could be implemented, and had hands-on experience in the nitty-gritty level of how cities implement climate sustainability. And so, as you mentioned, Oliver is currently at the MBTA as the Director of Sustainability there, but had spent many years before that running the efforts for Mayor Joe Curtatone of Somerville prior to that, and then prior to that had worked in engineering as an environmental engineering consultant for supporting many cities with their sustainability efforts around the country.
So here's a little bit more of his conversation with Rupa.
We can come up with a lot of technical solutions that sound great in the abstract, but they have a much better chance of being adopted, getting support, and then building off of them if people can see a short-term benefit. When we say we want more efficient housing because that actually lowers utility bills, that's a pretty simple problem. But what we're doing is we're centering the pocketbook needs of homeowners and renters.
Is that kind of the holy grail? We're talking about a massive systems level global issue. How does one at a city level tackle that and then produce results that 12 months from now people feel in their pocketbook and you're actually making gains? Where's the intersection, right? What's those one or two things that you want to see happen 12 months, 24 months that hits that sweet spot?
Yeah, we don't have the luxury of moving conveniently or comfortably. It is emergency level in terms of the impacts of climate change, heat, flooding, intense precipitation on all of our systems. And so the beauty of city government is that we can take on big picture, sweeping vision, right? Getting in that bucket, I would put making sure that the city's goals are aligned with the level of urgency that we're feeling, really finding the right ways to create our dashboard of what we're tracking, emissions being actually going down, what is coming from the building sector versus the transportation sector, how we are measuring our urban tree canopy in real time, how we are, what progress we're making on alternative, non-fossil fuel powered transportation, like growing our bike lane network and protected infrastructure. All at that, that's at the kind of big picture scale. And then at the really tangible, how do we show results right away? We have had a commitment in the city of Boston to plant many, many trees for many years. And it's always, we've kind of been stuck at a certain percentage of coverage of our tree canopy. Some of that is that as the heat increases, it's harder for trees to survive. And there's a lot of maintenance efforts in the early window that they're planted. Some of it is that we don't have enough staffing and of the appropriate represented expertise within the city organization to be able to plan, maintain, and keep up with all of the needs. Tree trimming on private properties, the ways that we can partner with school properties and others. And so our tree canopy is a major piece where I want to see a big, big difference. I think, as you heard, energy efficiency, particularly around residential homes and supporting our homeowners who often are living in older housing stock that has the greatest potential to gain from energy efficiency and the money saved and the benefits you feel. And then really incorporating all of this into every new action from the city, how our schools are built, how our streets are designed and how we are approving and permitting new development.
So I know you must be aware of the reporting, the Boston Globe article, Emma Platoff and Sabrina Shankman, about concern that the Green New Deal, there are critics saying it's just not happening fast enough. And they wrote at one point, quote, even some of her most, her being you, loyal supporters say she is moving more slowly than hoped, stoking fears that the promise of radical change will yield to just incremental progress as it so often has in this city, end quote. Do you feel like you're swimming in molasses? Do you feel like you're moving too slowly?
I have not made the progress that I would have wanted to this point, but it's not because we're in a permanent state of molasses. It's because there have had to be, we're not just aiming for quick, transient examples of radical change that provide a flash of hope. We are aiming for lasting impact. Generational impact. And there needs to be some internal organizational work to build up the capacity to support that in a sustainable way as well. And so really, it took a long time without a transition of more than 2 weeks in the beginning between Election Day and starting in this job. We didn't have the luxury of front loading all of our hiring. Step one was building the team, setting those leadership roles and organizational structures. And now that our team at the cabinet level, at least, is largely complete, it is step two is setting the big picture goals, really making concrete what we are trying to do, what we are measuring. And then step three, the urgent work of taking down all of the barriers so that we can not only get things done, but systemically get them done faster and bigger.
So other urgent work in policing last week, you swore in Michael Cox as the new police commissioner for the city. Here is a little bit of Cox actually speaking at the ceremony.
As a police officer, you know, we're taught the old adage that at the end of the day, that we have a right to go home safely. But I'm here just to remind, you know, the people that serve is that we're here to serve the citizens of Boston. And while I don't disagree with the adage, we want to expand upon it and make it clear that we're all in this together. All of us have a right to go home safely.
Sound there from WCVB. So if we focus for a minute on the right to go home safely, what's the first thing Cox needs to do and do differently?
He's already doing it, which is to set a vision of where we're headed and to commit the resources to making sure that our training, supports, processes can start to shift in that direction. Our officers have been working without a contract for multiple years now, as we've been through multiple leadership transitions and awaiting permanent appointments. And so building some of that into the contract will be a key priority.
A timing in mind for finalizing a contract?
We have been waiting to add our new commissioner to kick off planning and negotiations in earnest. And so I think it's hard to predict at this point, but we're already looking at retroactive contracts. And so there's certainly urgency to get this one done and even move on to the next one. Finding ways to ensure that the workforce of the police department as the workforce of the city reflects our communities and the diversity of our communities. And starting from a first priority of building community trust in everything that we do. I think that is his major commitment. Every space that I've been in with him, and we'll be visiting the police academy right after this as well to speak to the new recruits who are going to be police officers soon, is to emphasize that we are here to serve community. And that means we have to be present, visible, partnering, and building trust.
So, that's so interesting because it's almost like we have set up a bit of a dichotomy between the thin blue line and the to serve and protect. And we know there are a whole range of cultural changes that need to be made in the Boston Police Department. We know about Michael Cox's own history with the department, both coming up in leadership and having been beaten as a black man for mistaken identity as a plainclothes police officer in 1995. Can one guy walk that line, balance those priorities so that literally everybody can get home safely, especially because we know that in Boston, where you live and who you are dramatically affects whether you can get home safely right now?
No challenge in our city that has been formed over decades and generations can be solved with the snap of the fingers of one person. But what one person can do, I think Michael Cox's career has really highlighted that potential, that each one of us can make a difference. And when we have leaders in key roles who can then build teams to change culture and empower action, that can very quickly shift the dynamic and show results. And so he's now 1 week on the job officially, and we're already going to spend some time at different parts of the department with different he's getting to get replugged in with the precincts and captains and all the work happening in the various units. But we're already seeing and feeling just how much all of our city departments are all hands on deck for what we need to get done. BPD has been a big part of this Orange Line shutdown, too, in helping to direct traffic and enforce bus lanes and bike lanes. And so much of what we are aiming for is not only response in times of crisis and solving crime and tackling the issues of community violence that far too many still experience in our city, but being present and supporting the most joyful times in our city, large-scale events and parades and the many ways in which community relies on safety and a public safety presence for the events that we cherish.
We're talking Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, Mondays with the Mayor here. Just a last quick question on this. One thing that the Boston Police Department has to just stop doing right now that you hope Michael Cox will help stop in the next few months?
I think we are getting there, but sometimes there's a feeling of either or, right? Are you supporting the officers and the department, or are you pushing for change? And in fact, the best way to support our officers is to implement the reforms that are needed to build trust so that the entire city can truly understand all of the hard work that goes into 24 hours a day coverage from our officers and from the department. And so I think some of what I would like us to stop doing is holding up false choices or false dichotomies that in fact have been the actual barrier themselves. When we think about the ways that our, as the commissioner was saying, that the public is intertwined with the health and well-being of our officers, the mental health experience that they have on the job, the supports that they get are very much intertwined with how they show up in these spaces as well. And so it is all one ecosystem of public safety and public health that we're looking to reshape and provide resources.
Now we're going to add another voice, which is incoming Boston Public Schools Superintendent Mary Skipper. Superintendent Skipper, thanks for joining Mayor Wu and me.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad to meet you. Glad to have you on the line.
Hey, Soup.
How's it going, Mayor?
Very good.
You guys talking to each other a lot these days?
Yes. She's not officially started yet, but she's basically here all the time.
Does it feel like you have started, Mary Skipper?
Oh, definitely. I think, Dr. Eccleston is our acting soup. He's doing a terrific job. The reality is that at this time of year, there's decisions that need to be made that are short term, and then there are those that have impact longer term. So, you know, we're very good at communicating as well as communicating with the mayor and the city about what those longer term kinds of decisions are to make sure that we're setting a course for success. So, it's wonderful to be back. It's wonderful to make reconnection with so many colleagues that are still here in the Boston Public Schools doing great work. And it's also wonderful to be welcoming back some who have left, who are coming back to join the fun as we build BPS back.
So I appreciate you both teaching me the word soup, which only meant one thing to me before today, and now will mean something else entirely. And Soup Skipper, I'm going to stay with you for a second longer. Listen, one of the things about senior leadership is always dealing with the unexpected, and I get that. But given the tall order you were coming into, when you heard this Orange Line news, you had to be like, oh, come on. You had to be.
There was that moment, for sure, you know, as there are any time there's something that's really unexpected. But, you know, I think one of the things about having an incredible team and having an incredible partnership with the city and with our mayor is that no matter what the issue is, you know, it's not something that I would be dealing with alone. This is something that, you know, it's going to impact our entire city. It certainly will have a disparate impact on our school district. But the minute that the news broke, we were on the phone having conversations in meetings that very moment just to be able to start to prepare. And, you know, I think that, you know, we've also been in conversations with MBTA and that's been helpful to know, you know, there's some information that I think would, you know, really parents will be sending out and have been sending out in weekly communications to them. It's our attempt to reestablish trust with the community. Of our parents and to make sure that they're getting the information. And I, you know, I think in any of those kinds of high intensity situations where it can be, you know, doom and gloom, we have to see the bright side that this will hopefully mean a well-improved and safer public transit system for our students. And that's, at day's end, what we want, something that's reliable and safe.
Mayor Wu, you nodded several times there, and I'm mindful that you're both an Orange Line rider and a BPS parent. What do parents need to hear in the next 5 to 7 business days to feel like BPS has this locked down in the best sense of it?
Families need information. Our families are incredible and can figure out any number of complex situations, but they need the time and the information to be able to make that plan. I was nodding along, especially because I was remembering the moment the news broke. I feel like I got that text message that said, Superintendent Skipper wants to know if the whole team can meet at 7:30 the next morning, just to make sure that BPS was already hand in hand with the planning from day one. And so not only have the city's department, transportation departments and community outreach departments been working on this, BPS has been going above and beyond to make sure that we are targeting specific resources for students. For example, the superintendent has arranged for 5,000 free 7-day MBTA passes to go out to families so that they can do dry runs and practice riding the T with students ahead of time, so that the first day of school isn't the first time that our young people on the MBTA are taking that route. We are still pushing.
Oh, do you mind? Can I just pick up on that for a second? Superintendent, how is that distribution going? I mean, having them and getting them to families are two different things.
Correct. And so our distribution will be through the schools because that is the place that, in general, our families are most familiar with, feel most comfortable. We also have them available at different events that we know families will be gathering.
For example,
we'll be using kind of a multi-pronged approach.
I want to get really concrete for listeners who may want to get their hands on one.
Sure, sure. So right now the point of contact is through their school and their school leaders. That's the easiest place for them to pick up. We're also, you know, kindergarten countdown. There'll be, you know, table and ability to be able to give to parents there. You know, if the schools themselves are having back-to-school events, they'll be offered there as well. The idea of those passes is to really allow students and families to sort of travel train together. You know, particularly our 7th and 8th graders, when you think about it, this is their first experience taking the public transportation to and from school. And so we thought it would be a good idea in working with the MBTA to be able to get the passes that they would have the ability to be able to see the route that their student will be going on, to perhaps travel it with them and not have to do it at cost. And the 7-day, you know, really allows them the flexibility to be able to do it several times. But there's some other things, you know, in addition to that. Like, for instance, I think parents will be relieved to know that at each of the MBTA transit stops along the Orange Line, there will be MBTA transit ambassadors. They will have bright red polo shirts and sweaters and jackets that will have tea on them. There will also be BPS staff who will have marked shirts and sweaters to be able to indicate. So there'll be lots of human help and support right there for students as they're making their changes, and staff as they're making their changes between the transit lines. You know, we know it's going to be a stressful time. There's no penalty for students coming in late at all.
What about staff, Superintendent Skipper?
We're working closely with our supervisors, and we've sent messaging out to say we need to be empathetic, to understand that staff, too, are going to have their challenges. And so we will be working with our staff, of course, in the same way recognizing, you know, it is going to be disruptive and stressful. And we want the first days of school to be celebratory and full of joy. So whatever we can do from a policy standpoint, we will. We also, you know, there's the city's accessibility guide is something we're using as a joint tool with the city for our families, making that accessible. The shuttle bus services, this has been this has really been a work that our transportation department has taken on with MBTA and the city to really look at and identify the schools along the Orange Line that will have the greatest impact. And they're making sure that, like, particular, like, there's a north loop between Oak Grove and Government Center. There's a south loop between Back Bay, Copley, and Forest Hills. These are the areas that, from surveying and looking at addresses, we know are going to be the ones that have traveled the most. And so we're getting all that information out. We obviously are.
I know you've got tons to tell me, but I got some questions I really want to make sure to get into. So I don't I don't mean to cut you off. But I'm cutting you off so I can ask a couple of things. Plus, Mayor Wu here in the studio, and you're listening to Radio Boston. We've got Mary Skipper, the new superintendent, on the line. We've got Mayor Michelle Wu of Boston here in studio, too. Mayor Wu, you wanted to add something in real
just
quick there.
Just one other example of the type of creativity and quick work and planning that's going into this between BPS and the city and all of our agencies. The start of school is always a little tricky with school buses, and the BPS transportation team is incredible. They had worked so hard to get ahead of everything and to be in a place where we feel very prepared for this year. And then the Orange Line shutdown was announced. We have offered the ability for students who had signed up for MBTA passes to actually come back to yellow bus service for this period of time as well, which has then required additional drivers. And there have been a lot of negotiations with the school bus drivers unions to make that possible so that we could accommodate that. It seems like a small change, but it's something that has tremendous organizational ripple effects and routing effects. And so I just want to thank our teams, BPS Transportation, the school bus drivers union, for making even a change like this possible in such short notice.
And that feeds into, and I'll stay with you for a moment here, Mayor Wu, another question, which is, you know, state expectations. You went through a very public negotiation process with, you know, the Department of Education on performance and a memorandum of understanding. Buses must achieve an on-time arrival rate of 95% or better each month. 99% of buses have to arrive within 15 minutes of school. Now the Orange Line. Are you getting any slack from the state?
Well, the superintendent is incredible, and I know she has been in ongoing conversations, again, right from the very beginning with the Commissioner of Education and the team up at DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. So obviously everything is going to be impacted across the region when it comes to transportation during this period of time. We are doing our best to plan ahead and even plan for the unpredicted. But there will be some impacts, and we are going to do all that is humanly possible to make it work.
You know, this is the Baker administration that did this. Superintendent Skipper chose to shut down the Orange Line for a month at the start of school. It's also the Baker administration running the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Are you getting responsiveness? Do you feel like you are getting a realistic response from the Baker administration about the competing demands for on-time arrival and getting students to school in time, given this unexpected change?
Right. So what I can say is the conversations I have are, you know, at my level as superintendent, are with Department of Education and with our commissioner. Right away, you know, shared the information. And what I will say is there has been support. You know, we are going to hold ourselves to as close of the expectation as possible to get our students to and from safely and on time. But I think that there is, you know, a clear understanding that some of this impact is impact that is not our doing. It's not we can control it. And so we need to see how, you know, those 7 days of the back to school go, as well as beyond that when the Orange Line resumes and resumes in some kind of a different schedule, and what that means to our students. I think the critical pieces to this is ongoing communication and dialogue with the state, which we have, and they have been receptive and supportive, understanding that this is not in our control right now.
Mayor, go ahead.
I just want to echo what the superintendent is saying, that we're not doing this work in order to be able to meet a piece of paper with some signatures on it. We are doing this work so that we can serve all of our young people and their families with the level of learning and resources that they deserve. Transportation is a big part of that. Whether or not you are missing on a regular basis the first chunk of the school day completely impacts how motivated you can feel, how supported you feel as a learner within our school department, within our school environment. And so we know how much this matters to families on many, many levels, and myself included. And we are going to get this right. We are going to hit all of our hurdles and benchmarks as much as possible, not because we need to be in compliance, but because our students deserve every resource and every opportunity, and the city of Boston has the potential to deliver that for them.
So Superintendent Mary Skipper is on the line, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu here in the studio here on Radio Boston. Mary Skipper, we have just a couple of minutes left. COVID learning loss, gaps between the number of teachers you need to have and the number you currently have hired, concerns about representation of enough teachers of color in classrooms that are predominantly students of color. We've just done a ton today on transportation. What's the next big pain point that is your, you know, if you have two or three things on a dashboard that you are just going to watch nonstop and work on nonstop as you start, what's the next big pain point for you to work on?
Well, I think, you know, the last couple of years have just been incredibly disruptive. And I think in particular, you know, for BPS, not just the pandemic, but just, you know, change of leadership overall. So I think, you know, coming back in and stabilizing the system, making sure that there's good systems and support at all levels, this is going to allow us to build back a foundation in general that we'll pick up, you know, from the pandemic and, you know, really look to accelerate our learning, our students' learning. So it's not just about remediation and filling gaps, but it's with a future thinking, you know, of how do we accelerate that learning and make sure from an equitable academic opportunity standpoint, all students are getting that. But particularly students who were most impacted historically and because of the pandemic. So our Black and Brown students, our students with IEPs, our multilingual learners, and our multilingual learners with IEPs. So this will be at the forefront of, for those groups of students, making sure that that acceleration of learning is, you know, is their opportunity. To do that, you know, we're really kind of looking at a blueprint. It's a blueprint of what I would say, you know, kind of focuses on priorities that they're really just developing healthy student-centered schools. And they range from the prioritizing and the acceleration of you know, academic performance, to really what I think is a critical one, which is building back and strengthening access of social-emotional learning for our students. That was one of the terrible outcomes of the pandemic, is we lost our fabric. We lost the fabric of human being and communication. And so when students returned, they had almost forgotten how to communicate, how to relationship build, how to be able to regulate to participate. So we'll be working very hard on that in the second year of the rebuild.
I'm so sorry. I actually have to stop you there. We're coming down to the end of the show. But what that tells all of us is, will you come back again very soon, Superintendent, so we can have the follow-up conversation?
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic. So that is incoming Boston Public Schools Superintendent Mary Skipper on the line. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu for our Mondays with the Mayor. Always great to have you in Studio 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiziana.
And that is our show for today, folks. Please join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.